So, welcome to Oon on this amazing day. Dogwoods welcome you. The carpenter bees welcome you. The tulips welcome you. Ajuga welcomes you. The cherry blossoms welcome you. The tree peonies welcome you. Reminded of Soen Nakagawa's statement that all beings are blossoms, blossoming in a blossoming universe. Mm-hmm. And today is certainly a witness to that. It's everything is ripening, blooming. So welcome, and thanks for showing up. Thanks for blooming here together in this garden, this Buddha field of blossoming beings. We have been exploring our forms, the different things that we do here, our practices, our style. And today I want to talk a little bit about the relationship between a teacher, a Dharma teacher, and his or her student. I really shouldn't say his or her. The student doesn't belong to the teacher. Nobody belongs to anyone else. Your child isn't yours. And a student isn't a teacher's possession. So I should say the relationship between the student, and a teacher. I announced this Dharma talk today as warm hand to warm hand. And this is the relationship, a really wonderful description of the relationship between a student and a teacher, a Dharma teacher in particular. Warm hand to warm hand. There's a warmth, a connection between the teacher and the student. And in our particular lineage, the Phoenix Cloud lineage, and Soto Zen, which is the style of the school of Zen that we are part of, this is a very important quality of that style. That is warmth. And there is a form of relationship between a student and a teacher, which is cold, which could be said cold hand to cold hand. That doesn't sound very appealing, but there is a relationship there. And I often like to describe this difference between warm hand and cold hand as the difference between what might be called a granting teacher and a withholding teacher. And I'm sure if you thought about your own teachers and the teacher you may be, which you are, you might find it helpful to make this distinction between being a granting teacher and a withholding teacher. The granting teacher is sort of warm and giving, granting. The withholding teacher, still a teacher, but has the style of being aloof, being distant, being somewhat cold. And I like to describe the two as one as the granting teacher is in the spirit of Socrates. Socrates saw himself as a midwife. So the assumption there is that the student is pregnant, is already full, already complete, already to give birth to wisdom. All the teacher needs to do is help that person give birth to what already is there. That wisdom is already present. The withholding teacher I sometimes describe as rabbinical, like a rabbi, or like a guru, where the guru, well, it sort of feels like that a little bit. You know, the guru sits on a throne or on a special cushion or has a special stick, and has a special costume, and everybody else is, what is it called, Taishin, the unwashed worldling, the uninstructed worldlings that Buddha spoke about. You're all the unwashed, the ignorant ones. The guru, the rabbi, he's the one, she's the one that has the wisdom, and you just sit there and absorb the teachings, and you bow to the seat, you know. Anything the guru says, it's wonderful, right? Mm-hmm. You obey, because the guru knows, the rabbi knows, and it's your job to just sit there in ignorance and listen. And eventually, maybe you can absorb some of that. Different styles. I'm not saying these are an absolute distinction. I might just illustrate these two from a Zen point of view. We find our Zen teacher, of course, sitting by a stream. All stories. Zen teacher sitting by a stream. And in meditation, of course. And this unwashed, uninstructed worldling comes along and says, I would like to be your student. I would like to study with you. And the teacher looks up and says, what brings you here? What's your intention? And the uninstructed worldling says, I'm really curious about Zen. And I suspect many of you have a little bit of that. You know, what is this Zen thing? And the teacher says, well, just kind of sit down beside me. And the the uninstructed worldling sits down. This tongue teaser. And the master, the teacher says, oh, you're curious, are you? And the student says, yes. Well, he takes him by the neck, and he pushes his head under the water and holds it there under the stream water until the uninstructed worldling can't breathe and is going, just. Finally, the master pulls him out. And he says, okay, now you come back to me when your desire to study Zen is as strong as your desire to breathe. Hmm. Wow. And of course, the uninstructed worldling. I'm just curious. It's not like, it's as important to me as breath. That's the withholding teacher. That's the cold teacher. And there are many stories in Zen, in this spirit. The granting teacher, same uninstructed worldling comes along. Oh, sit down, you want to study Zen? Sit down beside me. Now, do you hear the sound of the stream? And the uninstructed, I should have said before this, that the uninstructed worldling says, I don't know where to begin. And the teacher says, do you hear the sound of the stream? And the young man says, yes. And the teacher says, let's begin there. collaborative, right? Let's begin there. Let's begin here, where we are. Don't go away. Let's start here. That's more like a granting teacher. So you could say that the granting teacher has complete confidence in the student, the one who approaches, has confidence that there's already wisdom there. It's just not manifest yet. This confidence that a Dharma teacher has in those who come to study with him or her is not based on some, you know, perfection that the teacher has. It's not based on some attainment that the teacher has had, nor any kind of authority. It's just that a really good Dharma teacher has enough confidence in him or herself that he or she can offer that to others in complete acceptance of others who want to learn. And with such a teacher, one can feel completely accepted, completely human, completely at ease, and not feel all tense and rigid. So if the Dharma teacher is able to be human, not this authority, not this guru, not this rabbi, it's possible for the student to be fully human as well. We have a bird in our lineage called the phoenix. And the phoenix burns up and then reemerges as a new being. Both teacher and student need to burn up, need to burn away that ego, and to return to just being human, which is a hard enough thing to be. You don't have to be a magnificent guru or bird. It's hard enough to be just human. If both teacher and student don't burn up that ego and become fully human, it is very possible for that teacher and that student to become arrogant, to become intoxicated with their own power, and to become hard, cold hand. It's easy to become cold and hard and forget, especially when you're a teacher and others come to study with you and think you have something to offer. It's really easy. A wonderful yoga teacher to become intoxicated with your own power and to become cold, not to have that compassion for your, not for your students, but for those students who come to study with you. It's easy. And I had a teacher once who gave a weekend workshop here, and he was ready to leave after the workshop was over. And he couldn't find his keys, his car keys. And he started to panic. You know, where are my keys? I can't find my keys. So looked all over for the keys. And I'm looking too for his keys. Couldn't find his keys. And he got all flushed and nervous and anxious. And he said something very interesting to me. He said, at that time I wasn't Mado, I was just Barbara. And he said, Barbara, he said, pretend like I'm not here. Just go about your business and pretend that I'm not here. I thought, that's very strange. Pretend that he's not here? And I considered that. And it occurred to me that he did not want me to see him as human, as someone who loses his keys. So I'm just to pretend that he's not interesting, isn't it? Yeah, it's weird. But this often happens, that we don't want to be seen. If we're in any kind of position of power or authority, we don't want to be seen as having what we might consider flaws or vulnerabilities or mistakes, make mistakes. Oh, just ignore that, erase that. So it's really important never to forget your humanity. That is our practice. But there is an element of being a granting teacher that can look like something cold. And I want to share another story about a disciple who had come to see his master. And the master lives on a hilltop in a dense forest. It is evening, the sun is setting, and the disciple thinks many times to leave the master and go back because he has to pass through miles of forest and hilly track, and then he will be able to reach his village. But the presence of the master is so enchanting that he cannot gather enough courage to leave him. So he lingers on and on. And then it is almost midnight. And the master says, now it's time. You should go. And the student looks outside. It's dark. There is no moon. And he becomes apprehensive. To pass through the woods on such a dark night is dangerous. So seeing that the disciple is apprehensive, the master says, what is the problem? Why are you afraid? The disciple says, Master, it is so dark outside, and there is no moon, and the sky is completely black. I feel afraid. So the master takes a candle and lights it and gives it to him. You can take this candle with you, says the master to the student. When the disciple is getting ready and going out the door, the master blows the candle out. Suddenly there is darkness, darker than before, and silence. The disciple says, Master, I don't understand. And the master says, there is no need to understand. My light is not going to help you. A borrowed light is not going to help you. You will have to find your own light. The night is dark. Life is dark, and there is danger and risk at every step. But you will have to find your own light. No borrowed light. No borrowed light is going to help you. This is a what seems to be a kind of withholding teacher. A granting teacher, deeply. One more story about my daughter, who is my best teacher. She knows that I have a little bit of agoraphobia. I don't like to get lost. I'm really afraid of getting lost. And we were in Rome. She joined us on vacation. And we went on an excursion in Rome together. And she said, "Mom, let's do this experiment." Immediately, my heart started pounding. She said, "I know you're afraid of getting lost," but she didn't say this, but I think she could have said, "But Mom, I have confidence in you." She didn't say that. She says, "I know you're afraid of getting lost, but let's have this experiment. Let's find our way home. You find your way back to the hotel." We were in the center of the city. "And I'm just going to be behind you. I'm not going to say anything. I'm just going to be behind you and just go ahead and find your way home." I was terrified. But of course, you know, she was my daughter and I got to be my mom, and I had the sense that, you know, she was going to be there. She was going to be walking behind me, but she was not going to be saying anything. So I did this, like walking into the darkness with this disciple. I was my daughter's disciple at that moment. And so I actually found my way, terrified. And I was like tuning into some kind of intuitive sense of where we should go. I had really no idea what I was doing, but I was just going on intuition, trying to remember landmarks, you know, that we had passed. And so, yes, I did find my way. We got into the railway station, and we were just at the stop where our hotel was. And there was a map, you know, as they have in the railway stations sometimes. And there were two entrances and exits. And you could go this way or that way to get to the street where our hotel was. So I stood there looking at the map, trying to think, should I go that way or that way? And I started to go that way. And behind me, I hear, "Uh-uh!" And then I just went that way. This is a really wonderful teacher, right? This, stay with you. Mm-hmm. Stay with you. Mm-hmm. Stay with you. And then maybe... maybe not saying anything, not saying, "Mom, that's the way, you stupid." "Can't you remember?" No. So that was a beautiful time, and she continues, as we know, our daughters are amazing. So at some point, I have to say, and I would say this about my own daughter, that the student passes the teacher. And the teacher slows up to allow that. absolute must. In Zen practice, it's only when the student's wisdom exceeds the teacher's that this student is worthy of becoming a teacher. And just like a doctor, for example, you would say a really good doctor, right, never wants to see you again. Or a good therapist. You know, we keep going back to therapy and therapy and therapy. You know, a good therapist never wants to see you again. So similarly, a really good Zen teacher never wants to see you again. You go out there, take your candle and light the world, and I recede. I want to say one more thing about Dokusan, which many of you have asked about. Maybe I could say that literally what Dokusan means, this is a private meeting with the teacher, means going to the teacher alone. And if we're continuing with this metaphor, bringing your candle, your own candle, your own lit candle into the room and allowing the teacher to blow it out so that both of you are sitting in the darkness. Both human. No separation. When you're in the Dokusan room, and we're going to be building hopefully a new Dokusan room, proper Dokusan room. When you sit in front of the teacher, or not even front, you sit in relation to the teacher. More, as you go to Dokusan more and more, the space between you shrinks. And you become closer and closer to that teacher. So that the roles of teacher and student just disappear. And you're just two human beings, as we sometimes quote, two human beings groping around in the dark with an intelligent look on your face. No pretense that my light shines up the world. It just happens to be my little light, you know, that I carry around. But you have one too. And when we meet, eventually the space between us disappears. But it takes time because the tendency is to occupy your own little bubble, your own ego space. And when you're in the dark, and that's why when we sit together, we don't know anything about each other. Some of us know a little bit. But the idea is, it doesn't matter what your career is, where you come from, what your religion is. You're just a human being sitting on this cushion together with other human beings sitting on this cushion. And that's what Dokusan is. Slowly, you and the teacher disappear. Or your contour, your face, we call this, in Koban Chinoroshi calls it menju, face to face. Face to face, no space. Face to face meeting, complete vulnerability. We could call it a kind of eclipse. There's a darkness that I could even say that there's many ways you can construct this. But in with the relationship between the student and the teacher, maybe eventually eclipse, so that the student is just really eclipses the teacher. And the teacher, for a while, and maybe even permanently, disappears. And it's a total eclipse. It's not like I'm sneaking out by the edge and I'm still here. No, I'm still the teacher. Don't forget that. That's, and I can testify to that, because I got a guy back there who is trying to eclipse me. No, who I've invited to. And so I can also feel myself, no. I'm sneaking out by the edge. No, I'm still remember this. No, a really good teacher welcomes that. Not just with respect to Dharma transmission, but in every single case. To be a midwife, to be a helper, to help you to shine, to grow that light within you that illumines the world. Your light, not a borrowed light. And so all the teacher really needs to do is to help you recognize how beautiful, how wise, how compassionate you already are. It's like holding up a mirror. Look at yourself. Can't you see this amazing individual? And we can do that for each other. And we can do that for our families, and we can do that for our friends and our colleagues. In that sense, we are all teachers, all Dharma teachers. That is our service. That is the way we serve all beings. To look how you're blossoming. Look how beautiful you are. And there are many ways to do that. Sometimes you do have to take that head and dunk it into the So sometimes we have to alternate between being granting and withholding. Granting and withholding and granting. And that takes many years practice and study and getting to know people.